Hopefully, this is the last time you hear this ad, because with Chime Checking Account, features like fee-free overdraft up to $200 with SpotMe and getting paid up to 2 days early with direct deposit, you can probably treat yourself to an ad-free upgrade to spend more time listening to your favorite podcasts, or at least grab yourself an extra morning latte this month. Join millions of Chime members who work on their financial progress with fee-free overdraft and no monthly fees. When you find new ways to save, you can reach your financial goals easier and still have the occasional treat. Take more control of your finances and say goodbye to monthly fees. Open your account in minutes at chime.com/goals24. That's chime.com/goals24. Chime feels like progress. Banking services and debit card provided by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. members FDIC. SpotMe eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply. Terms and conditions apply. Go to chime.com/disclosures for details.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
What's up, all? Aaron, but not that Aaron, here to tell you about SifPop Writer's Room. For the past several years, there have been a growing amount of writers for SifPop.com providing best ever challenges, movie reviews, themes, legacies, connections, and so much more. SifPop Writer's Room is where that all comes together, giving a voice to those words that you read. And on the show, every week is excellent, getting to chat such a wide variety of movies with a wide variety of movie lovers, and I'm really having a lot of fun with the show, and I just think that you would too. So check out SifPop Writer's Room wherever you listen to your podcast, and we'll see you over there. Just remember to knock first.
Live from a bunker in the heart of the Ozarks, a podcast where everything between these three microphones is work, it's SifPop. Welcome to SifPop Weekly, streaming live most weekends, are available to download later in your podcast feed, unless, of course, you're a patron.
Patrons get perks.
Patrons get those perks. Okay. Now, see, we do have a podcast audience. I'll explain that in a second. I'm your host, Aaron Dicer, and just because he lives in a hole in the ground doesn't mean he doesn't know about TNT. It's Andrew Ormsby, ladies and gentlemen.
Hard work!
Each week we'll chat about movies, television, whatever else from the pop culture universe is on our minds. And please welcome our guest this week. His podcast studio will keep getting hotter until he solves his review. It's Jonathan Paula, ladies and gentlemen.
Woo!
You are muted, my friend. You are muted.
Thank you for the heads up. I appreciate that.
No problem.
Great to be back. I don't know if it's going to be great to talk about these two films, but
we'll see. We will see. Yeah, I just love that you experience your own little escape room for us record this show. It's very kind of you. For the podcast audience, Andrew, when it was his time to say patrons get those perks, he held up a sign.
I said patrons get those
or
perks.
Whatever happens after that, when you make a noise or whatever. He held up a sign, Wile E. Coyote style, said, "Witness me." So there you go. There you go. I am excited. I'm always excited to talk about movies with you guys. We've got a couple movies, Escape Room Tournament of Champions and Space Jam, A New Legacy, to talk about today. And in honor of both of them being five-word colon titles, we are going to do... That's right. Best ever five-word colon movie titles.
We'll get into this at the end of the show, but I just want to say it would have been so much more fun if we did the worst ever movies with five words in a colon.
It's true. You're not there wrong.
There is
we were scraping the bottom of the barrel.
We'll talk about that later.
there were quite a few. I was surprised when I just as a joke, I looked this up to see if we even had, you know, five that we could use. And there's more than you would think. It's a very, like, for a colon title, five words.
I put together a list of at least 30 movies. But it was harder to find ones I really loved. Yeah. There was plenty I hated.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. There's four that I'm not mad at.
Fair enough. Yeah. We'll also, of course, do our buried treasure, fun stuff like that. Yeah, John and Andrew, I'm excited to talk movies with you guys.
This is going to be a good episode.
Yeah, we're going to have a lot of fun. So let's go ahead and get into it. Let's talk a little bit about Space Jam, A New Legacy.
Welcome, King James.
I'm a cartoon? I'm shorter than Kevin Hart! No.
What's up, Doc?
Bugs! Bring it here, man.
What brings you to Tonewall, Doc?
The computer dude kidnapped my son. Stop! What in the Matrix hell?
Hey!
What'd you do to my son?
The only way you're getting your son back is if you and I play a little basketball.
You want to play me in basketball?
When LeBron and his young son, Dom, are trapped in a digital space by rogue AI, LeBron must get them home safe by leading Bugs, Lola Bunny, and the whole gang of notoriously undisciplined Looney Tunes to victory over the AI's digitized champions on the court. It's Toons versus Goons in the highest stakes challenge of his life. Let's start here even before we do liked it, loved it, disliked it, hated it, or it was just okay. Let's start here. Experience with the original Space Jam. Jonathan, first.
That is a great question. I am a millennial. Mm-hmm. Proud of that. I'm a proud millennial. And I saw Space Jam when I was in my formative age, around 10 or 11 years old. I was a huge fan of the NBA and the Dream Team during that era. I think everybody was a huge kind of Bulls fan if you were a young boy in America. And yeah, Space Jam was awesome. I remember seeing it in theaters. I remember really enjoying it. And I rewatched it 10 years ago, and I rewatched it again this week. And a lot of it doesn't work. Michael Jordan is probably the worst actor in the entire film. I think it would have been markedly better. It would have been way better if they just had Charles Barkley be the lead. I think he has way more charisma. He would have been way more fun. But like the conceit and like having the supporting players with Bill Murray and Wayne Knight. They're fun. I think there's a lot of gags in it that still work. And more importantly, it's short. The movie's like 80 minutes without credits. It's very quick. Mm-hmm. And it is not a fantastic movie, but I think it's good and it's fun. And as a kid, I enjoyed it.
Andrew, what about you?
So good memories of it.
I'm going to literally echo everything John just said. It was like formative years. I was a huge Bulls fan back in the 90s. This movie was my childhood. I would watch it all the time. I had the CD for the soundtrack because the music is so good. To this day, that is an amazing soundtrack for a
Quad
movie.
Quad City DJs?
Yes, good. The Monstars. I did not recently rewatch it though, because it's one of those movies, if I rewatch it, I know I'm just going to be like, ooh, Jordan's bad. Ooh. So,
well, guys, I'm a little older than you.
Yeah, I was going to say, you were probably in your mid-20s or so when this came out.
Yeah, I was 20 when this came out. I was firmly in college, and I loved movies. I would watch a lot of movies that came out, but I did not enjoy.
If that's your caveat. Hey, guys, back then, I loved movies.
Add to that the fact that I am a lifelong diehard Pistons fan, and the Michael Jordan thing isn't necessarily going to be the draw for me. Although, I mean, how can you not love and respect MJ and everything he did? But yeah, so anyhow, I did not have the same kind of soft spot in my heart that that a lot of people did for that nostalgia. I'm interesting in how it will interested in how it will impact our reviews of the movie. Andrew, this time we'll start with you. Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay?
This is one of the worst movies ever made, and I'm gonna say it's okay.
I like that. What about you, John?
Honestly, I'm inclined to agree. Like objectively and technically, it's awful. It's atrocious. Every decision I hate. But at the same time, I kind of had fun. There was some of it that I kind of enjoyed, and like it wasn't all worthless. This was like a very like high side of hated it. If that makes any sense.
Aaron.
I think I'm just going to go low side of it was just okay. I have very similar feelings as you that there are just some objectively, I hate using that word with any kind of art.
Yeah, as soon as I did, I'm like, that's not there quite some, what I
mean. Well, you're not wrong.
Well, very, very commonly understood as poor choices, you know, bad things going on movie-wise. It's just not how you make a great movie, according to...
Maybe a better word is like structurally or narratively. There's a lot of blocks here that just do not add up to the sum that they're trying to reach.
What's interesting, though, is you talk about the fun element of it. This is a movie that is kind of following its own advice because the themes and message of this movie is, you know,
you do you.
Yeah. Quit worrying about, you know, and have fun. Have fun, you know, don't let fun. And it's like, this movie's like, yeah, we're just going to have fun. We're going to take all the walls down. We're going to, and have a blast. And there's something admirable there, I guess, you know, like it's not, it doesn't make for me like a transcendent movie watching experience or anything, but I imagine, like you mentioned, as a kid enjoying the first one, I imagine it's very much the same for this one. I imagine kids may really, really enjoy this. I don't know that they're getting a lot of the inside jokes, but
see, that's what I wanted to talk about.
This we have to get that elephant out of the room, because this movie shoots movie references at you like a fire hose. There's just Clockwork Orange and Game of Thrones.
Warner Brother at you like a fire hose.
There's more than just Warner Brother references here. There's Star Trek references. Like there's all sorts of
Warner
stuff.
Warner Brothers owns all that stuff.
Not Star Trek. Warner Brothers.
That's Paramount.
That's Viacom. That's CBS.
Yeah, there's some crossover, but yeah, the majority of it is
Warner Brothers. But yeah, they definitely use at least hint at other IP other than their own as well. Yeah.
Well, like I held up the Witness Me sign, you know, the Wile E. Coyote. Like, there's going to be kids watching this movie asking their dad, like, Dad, what's that a reference to? Oh, it's a reference to a movie called Mad Max Fury Road. It's in a post-apocalyptic horror film where people kill each other.
Which is a heavy R rating.
Yeah, heavy R rating. And then during the game, they're going to be like, Dad, who's that clown over there? Oh, that's Pennywise. He's a demon from the fifth dimension who's going to eat you in your dreams.
Yeah, and those guys in the background, that's Michael McDowell from Clockwork Orange, a Stanley Kubrick film from 43 years ago. Like, who is this movie for? The references
exactly.
Are just, I think the Harry Potter stuff and the Matrix stuff, I think most kids will probably kind of dig that. But there's so many like cutaways and throwaway gags that are just like, okay, I guess. Like, just because you own it doesn't mean you have to jam it in there. And it felt like an even worse version of Ready Player One.
Yes, it's definitely definitely that Ready Player One feel, not just for the Iron Giant references. Yeah. But I think I disagree slightly. I think if you're going to go this route and you're going to turn on the fire hose, if that's the metaphor, I think you just turn on the fire hose because, you know... There are going to be people like you and like us who get all that stuff, or at least most of it. And then the kids are going to get the stuff they get and have fun with it. You know, like the Harry Potter stuff, or you know, some of the cartoon stuff. You know, and that's going to be enough for them. I don't know that you gain anything. Like, it becomes such a cacophony of reference that. It's almost not even a movie anymore. It's just I understood that reference. You know, like it just becomes that after that after that. And I think if that's the route you're going, I think it's okay. I don't know that I would hold them too accountable for putting all that stuff in.
Maybe it's not the breadth of the references is not particularly what irks me. It's the lack of humor. It's not like there's this trend in media, especially lately, where it's like, hey, here's a thing you remember. Laugh at it.
Right.
It's like, but you're not actually recontextualizing this in any way that is humorous or even interesting. It's just, here's King Kong. Okay, what do you want me to do with that? It's just, yes, that is King Kong. Right. You're right. Why is that useful, you know?
There are some moments where they recontextualize stuff, and the Mad Max Fury Road is one of those, and there's a Casablanca moment. And
see, I laughed in this movie. I can't say I didn't laugh, because I laughed.
Mm-hmm.
But while I was watching, I'm like, that's stupid.
Yes.
You know, it's one of those things. And I don't know if, like, this is... I guess, Aaron, I would have to ask you, like, did it feel at all like the original Space Jam? Like, am I just having, you know, millennial goggles on? Like, this movie is just as bad as the first one is, or...
No, this is worse. The original Space Jam had simplicity on its side. It was a very, very simple setup. Like, we need to fight the Monstars, and they're short, so let's challenge them to a game of basketball. And who's good at basketball? Michael Jordan. That's the entire plot. This one is like, there's an AI and he's evil and he recruits LeBron's fictionalized son who is into video games. So they make the basketball game into a video game, and then they recruit other basketball players but turn them into video game characters with special powers. And then also the audience has to be all of Warner Brothers' intellectual property for the last 95 years. And then also humanity has been sucked into the phone through scanned cameras, and then they are going to be kidnapped and prisoners if you don't win the game. And it's like, what is going on here? Just have it be about basketball. Like, you're so overcomplicating this. I can't imagine any child under the age of 16 is going to be like, this makes sense. They can't, because I'm 35 and I'm like, this is stupid. I can't follow any of it.
To answer your question, Andrew, yeah, they're pretty much the same in my book. I had this.
They're just as silly.
Yeah, and you're not wrong that everything's turned up to 11 here, but a lot of the stuff you're talking about is in that original as well. There's cameo after cameo after cameo in that original, and it's just like, oh, we have access to this person, throw them in, we have access to this. So it's kind of that same kind of energy, like we're bringing all of pop culture into, you know, the toon world or whatever. I will say, as far as positives go, I think this movie effects wise is gorgeous. I think some of the stuff they are doing with the animation styles is really interesting and fun. I even thought the 3D facelift to the Toons was pretty well done. And, you know, when you do that stuff, you risk really kind of ruining the soul of the animated creation. And I thought, for the most part, they, you know, managed to figure out a way to make it feel like, no, those were still the characters. They were just computer generated at this point. And then it made, you know, for a part of the movie, right? Like, they made it into a part of kind of what was going on in the film. I also want to say that, as far as, you know, performances go, Don Cheadle is actually doing something. Like,
Cheadle gave everything. He went all in.
You know, good for him. Like, he's having fun. He's doing what, like, he understood this movie and was in a lot of it. Many of the other cameos that might have given good performances were just there for like a hot second and then gone. You know, Sarah Silverman and. I'm trying to remember who were some of the other ones.
Yun.
Yeah, yeah.
Yun.
Yep, was there as well. Steven Yun. Yeah. So, and then one I won't spoil because it's a joke in the movie that I was waiting for, and I was glad the movie made it.
Yeah.
That was legitimately funny. That was not ironically, not embarrassing. That was just genuinely a good, funny joke.
Yeah.
That sort of subverted expectations in a great way.
Yeah.
I mean, it made me laugh. You know, this movie made me laugh. I can't deny that.
Yeah.
But
you feel every guilty
single
for
time
it.
I felt guilty every single time I laughed. I'm like, I shouldn't find this funny. Here's a question, though. Growing up in, you know, John, whenever you and I were young, Looney Tunes were the thing. They were huge, you know? It was a big deal.
I grew up on Tiny Toon Adventures, watched that every day after school when I was young. They were part of the zeitgeist in the 90s. I don't know that Bugs Bunny resonates with kids anymore. And I sound like
what I'm saying.
Person when I say that, but does anyone care about Bugs Bunny or Elmer Fudd in 2021?
I don't know that they do. I do know that those characters are still actively making new content, though. Like, you know, HBO yeah. Max has a new Looney Tunes show. Like, I don't know yep. who's watching it or how many people are watching it. A lot of but the old exist. Looney, the all, a lot of the old Looney Tunes cartoons are on HBO Max. And it's quite possible parents, you know, sit down with their kids and fire up, you know, Looney Tunes to kind of keep them company. So I don't know. It's possible, but I kind of think I'm with you. I don't know that this generation is, but maybe Bugs Bunny is ubiquitous. Maybe it's just so in the cultural consciousness that every generation kind of, you know, knows who Bugs Bunny mm-hmm. is or Daffy Duck is.
Yeah.
But
maybe it doesn't matter because the movie made $55 million right. in the last 3 days. So like, clearly, what do we know?
Yeah. It just like I could understand like the three of us, like if we were to watch when we watch this movie, us going, oh, there's our favorite Looney Tune. Like I was going, oh, there's Marvin the Martian, or oh, there's Wile E. Coyote. You know, my like I would pick out my favorites and that would kind of make me happy. I just don't know kids today, so I don't know like if they watch Looney Tunes or what they're
those
watching.
Kids today with their other shows,
yeah, or if they even watch stuff, or if they're just you know like on well, the tweeters and stuff like that, and that's all they do.
John, I mean, John, you've got kids that would be kind of in that range, or getting close to that range, right? Like
as we speak, my youngest Emery, 3.5 years old, is downstairs watching Wreck-It Ralph. Breaks the internet
right
with her mom. And I watched the first 45 minutes or so with her until I had to come up to the office and record the show. But and I don't know that she loved the first one, which we just watched yesterday, but I don't know that she gets any of like the references to the internet, like the mm-hmm. jokes. About, mm-hmm. I know she doesn't. She doesn't understand what Google is yet. Another 5 or 6 years maybe, but I think she just likes the, you know, the characters and the jokes and the sort of slapsticky stuff.
And that is definitely here.
Whew. And there's plenty of that here. So I think from like a flashy, attention-grabbing perspective, Space Jam, A New Legacy has plenty of that, that it's going to entertain sort of the ADHD crowd, for lack of a better descriptor. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's also a lot in it that's like clearly aimed at millennials who grew up with the first one that are trying to like, they're definitely trying to go back to that well and recapture it. There's some nods and winks to the first movie. But yeah, it is sort of a weird amalgamation of like all these different competing styles
mm-hmm.
that yeah. I don't know if any of it works, but it's just like as a blender of everything, it's drinkable. You know, it's like, okay, yeah. I don't know what color this is. I don't know if it's good for you, but like, all right, yeah, I could, if I'm thirsty, I would drink it.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
That's
yeah.
kind of my feelings on this.
It is definitely the Capri Sun of movies. Like, it's like, I'm not sure what's in this, if it's good for me or not, but boy, it tastes good on a cold, you know, on a hot day. So, you know, might as well stick yeah. a straw through it and you know, drink it down.
Yeah, so I think like, yeah, paradoxically, I would recommend this, even though it's not a good movie. It's just like a 3 or a 4 out of 10. This mm-hmm. is like not a good film at all.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree. I'm on the exact same page.
I totally agree, except I would not recommend it.
you value other people's time. I want other people to commiserate with me.
Yeah.
Like, here's the question.
Misery does love company.
Here's the question I'm asking myself, and I guess I could get an answer from you guys before we move on to the next thing, unless you have anything else that you wanted to mention about this movie. But
no post-credit scene.
Are you glad you watched it?
Yeah. All movies have value.
Ooh. I don't believe that at all. glad is a strong word.
Yeah.
I'm okay with watching.
Do you feel like your 2 hours it. Time investment?
It is definitely much longer than an hour and 55 minutes yes. pushing it for a yes. film like this.
And that's my question. If yeah. today you knew generally the experience that you were going to have, would you invest 2 hours of your life in having that experience?
Well, I mean, I did that yesterday, and I knew exactly what the experience would be this. I knew okay. it would be just like okay. a mess of...
For yeah. me, yeah, simply for the fact that it felt good watching Looney Tunes again.
Yeah, yeah. There you go. Know? I think that's a recommend.
But other than that, no.
I think that's a recommend. I think, you know, to somebody... who is going to find some fun in it and enjoy the characters and just and know they're not getting Shakespeare, you know.
Yeah, I think that's this. We had this conversation with Fast 9 just a few weeks ago. Like, you know what you're getting. Yeah. I think if you're curious about this movie because you liked the original or just are familiar with the original, I think you've already made up your mind. Like, okay, I kind of want to check this out. I want to yeah. see what it's about. And in all honesty, LeBron's pretty good. He's certainly better than Michael no. was. You don't think he was good? I think he's athlete good.
He's athlete good. He's not actual good. He's like there's a sliding scale. I thought
he was just as bad as Michael.
Oh, I'm watching him back to back. Michael is so much more stiff. He had like no charisma, no energy.
Well, you can tell
next to Bill Murray's like flat.
Right. You can tell LeBron grew up in more of a visual medium era, right? Like he's been on camera and, you know, performing on camera in some way or another, you know, since he was in high school. So probably even junior high. But yeah.
Yeah. Again, I don't think he was great, but I think he was better than Michael. And I think he was serviceable. He did what he needed to.
Well, there you go. That is Space Jam, A New Legacy. Will they make a third? You can check. I think so. Yeah.
Oh, I hope not.
Will we wait another 20 years
for another generation in the next, five-time MVP?
No, they'll milk it a lot quicker this time, I would imagine. Based on the box office, you mentioned the box office. Look, this is 2 weeks in a row we have seen a movie that is available in home. And in this case, like with no extra charge, do really well at the box office. This is an interesting. I'm just saying I did not expect movies to do this well that were available at home.
We've had this conversation on the show before. Does the streaming services cannibalize the theater experience? They might not as much as I thought for sure.
So that could make things very interesting.
54 million in 3 days is a pretty, that's worldwide to be fair. That's not domestic.
It was like 33 or something.
31.6 domestic and 54.6 worldwide. And coming out of the pandemic with the streaming complement, that's a pretty decent take, I would think.
And if you look at what Disney said about their $60 million they made on the premier access for Black Widow, I think you'll see HBO move to maybe that thing where it's like, hey, for $20 you can have it at home or whatever, or you can go see it in the theater. I think it makes a lot of sense. It could be really interesting times we're heading towards.
And I, for one, with the young kids at home who can't always afford a babysitter for a night out, I love being able to just watch it at home. That is such a big convenience.
All right, let's move on to Escape Room, Tournament of Champions.
I know this is a lot to ask, but thank you for coming with me. Do you hear that?
Hey, what the hell is going on?
The train just uncoupled!
You gotta be kidding me.
Hold on!
Welcome to Minos Escape Rooms.
No.
What's happening again?
You guys have played the game before?
So what is this? Like a tournament of champions?
Look, we all know how this works. We solve the puzzles or we die.
Six people unwittingly find themselves locked in another series of escape rooms, so slowly uncovering what they have in common to survive as they discover all the games that they've played before. All right, Escape Room Tournament of Champions is the follow-up to, I'm going to call it a surprise hit, Escape Room. I don't remember what the details on that were. I just remember there was some fairly positive buzz, all things considered, about the first movie. Certainly enough that they made a second one. So let's start here. What is your familiarity with the first Escape Room? Andrew, we'll start with you.
I watched the first Escape Room 5 minutes before I left to go and watch the second Escape
Room. All right. We'll save your opinions on that then, maybe. Jonathan, what about you?
So I saw the first Escape Room, I think, when it came to streaming and DVD. Mm-hmm. And I honestly, when you sent out the email for this week's episode, I was like, oh, Escape Room, really? I'm not really excited about that at all. But I went back and I read my review of the original, and I had completely forgot. I actually liked it. I gave that a favorable. I was like, I think the words I said were like better than average and like surprising, pleasantly, mm-hmm. Pleasantly thrilling. I do not remember much of the original. But when I look back at what I wrote about it, clearly I had a good time.
And I guess as good a time as any to say you were not able to see Tournament of Champions, correct? I'm not showing in your area.
That is unfortunately true. The nearest theater playing it was 45 minutes away. And if you can't tell already, I'm battling a cold. So I thought let's not make the people around me have an un, uncomfortable experience if I'm coughing the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I stayed home and I missed this one, but I'm curious to see what you guys thought.
Yeah. And as is, you know, happens occasionally on the show, you get to be the question asker. Like you can, you know, kind of clarify some of our thoughts and ask us opinions. Also, we will, as always, steer clear of spoilers for you. I will say, Andrew, that we will probably do a SIF spoil on this because there's certainly, you know, plenty of stuff that happens that I can't talk about in spoiler free, but would like to talk about as far as the review of this movie goes. So
I do remember the original had a bunch of twists, turns, and reveals, mm-hmm, especially in the last 20 minutes. It was like, okay, this actually all led to something. It wasn't just pointless. And I think that's one of the reasons I like the original is it actually had a backstory. And mm-hmm, I feel like so often in these types of movies, it's always just a mysterious thing. And it's like, no, just tell us what it is. Do you have, is there someone behind the curtain or are you just teasing and jerking us around for 90 minutes? And I was thankful the original kind of had answers.
I agree. You can go check out my review of the original Escape Room, in which I am very similar to what Jonathan was saying. Had a good time and was surprised by how much of a good time I had. I remember feeling like in the original that this is the kind of movie and the kind of experience I would love for there to be a series of movies like this. Like, I think it's got, you know, it's, listen, I'm not the first to say it. It's a PG Saw, right? Like, it's a PG-13 version of...
Yeah, like Saw without the gore.
Like, the Saw promise, at least. I'm not saying Saw has always done this, by my understanding, but no, at least...
100%. That's a great analogy.
But the promise of Saw was puzzle solving, you know, for your life. And
it reminded me of the franchise Cube as well.
Yes, yes. And there's some direct references to Cube in this one, by the way.
Okay,
so,
fair enough.
I don't know if they were intentional, but they certainly stood out to me. But yes, that's another good comparison. We haven't done it yet. Andrew, what do you think? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay?
First movie. I thought it was okay. I didn't hate the fact that I watched it. Mm-hmm. It was entertaining enough. This one, though, I didn't like it. I did not like it. No.
I am also firmly in the didn't like it camp, unfortunately.
Okay, then.
Man, there's some reasons for this, and some of it will be difficult to without going into spoilers to really talk about. I'll start with some positives, though. I think I liked it maybe more than you did, Andrew, just by kind of the tone you were using. What I really liked about this one is I actually thought the puzzle aspect of this one was better than the first one. I thought some of the puzzle solving, the room solving, that kind of stuff made more logical sense. In the first one, some of the stuff was just nonsense. You know, there was one room in the first one that could have been solved immediately and easily through an alternative solution. You know, like just like that kind of stuff. And these rooms in this one felt more progressive. They felt more like they understood how an escape room works. I feel like maybe they did a lot more research into how you build an escape room, what it's actually like, that kind of thing on this one. So I loved the puzzles more in this one.
Yeah, for what
have you guys ever been to an escape room before?
Yes.
I was just about to say, it's nothing like a real escape room. There is no fire. There's no ice. There's no like whatever happens in the sequel. I can't imagine it's much different than the first one. But yeah, this is not my experience going to. I've been to two or three now and they're fun.
Right. I'm not talking about the life and death aspect of it. I'm talking about the puzzle solving aspect of it. In the second.
Yeah. And that even I think felt flat to me in
the first one. And I'm saying it's better in the second one. It feels more like...
I'll give the movie that it did feel like, okay, yeah, I can definitely see elements taken from actual escape room, like the true puzzle solving elements. And, you know, I was like,
yes,
good. This is, except just no more fire and ice and death and stuff like that.
Right.
I am hesitant to say that I have never not escaped from an escape room.
Oh, you don't want to jinx yourself.
I say that because I don't want to have a black box show up on my doorstep.
From Minos?
I just kick it.
All right, so the puzzle aspect was stronger, which I think personally, that interests me. I think that actually sounds like an improvement.
It
but is. But how was the actual, the executions? How was the inventiveness of the offings? When people get offed, was it fun? Because that's what that's the big thing.
No, like, no, it's terrible.
Okay, that's disappointing.
No, it is very disappointing. Yeah,
because that's one of the things I love about the Final Destination series.
Yes.
Is the inventiveness of all the kills, and I feel like Escape Room has the potential to kind of really play into that. Like, we can kill people or at least dispatch them in really creative, like Willy Wonka style ways. Mm-hmm. So that's disappointing.
Well, and in many ways, without spoiling it. It's almost as if the movie not only didn't understand that, but kind of went the opposite direction on that. Like, it's so weird. Like, it doesn't understand how stakes work. I feel like this movie doesn't understand how stakes work in some ways.
That seems like day one of script writing.
You would think.
I took a script writing course. That is the first thing you learn about stakes and consequences.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. The biggest issue I have with this movie is it's called Escape Room Tournaments of Champions. You can gather from that everybody in this movie coming back is somebody who's won a previous, you know, escape room thing, right? So you would assume from that logic that these people are the best of the best and that they should be able to, you know, get through everything and you'll make it out.
Are you saying they don't approach any of the puzzles with logic and patience?
They're idiots. They're all idiots.
And none of them matter.
You know, yeah. And none of them matter. Like, there's, I say that for every single one, in every single contestant, not just, you know, our two leads coming back, you know, even them. There are moments where I'm like, how did any of you make it out of the first escape room? It's
so
pretty
sad. There's not any moments or characters in this film where you have two smart characters working together to problem solve something difficult that neither one of them can figure out individually. Because that is like movie porn for me. I love those scenes. That bit Die Hard 3 with the two bottles of water.
Yeah.
Where Sam Jackson and Bruce Willis are trying, like, I love that scene because it's just a riddle and they got to work the problem and figure it out.
Yeah, there are hints of that. There are hints of problem solving. Again, because I think the puzzles are more intricate, more clever, and so they have to. Like, they have to have those scenes of them solving it. I think what Andrew is saying and what I would completely 100% agree with as my biggest problem with this movie is it does not even sniff the potential of its title. It gives you Escape Room Tournament of Champions, and it is not that movie. It is Escape Room 2. This is Escape Room 2. This is not Escape Room Tournament of Champions. And I don't know how to say that any differently other than to say I was excited by some of the same things, Andrew, I think you were, and this movie just does not even care to deliver on those promises. So
like, you could make it to where, and hopefully this isn't too big of a spoiler, but you could make it to where the contestants know how to solve these problems. It's the actual execution of solving these problems that is difficult. Like, the mental fortitude they got, they know, like, okay, we know how to solve this, this puzzle, but the actual act of doing it is going to be difficult.
Mm-hmm.
That would have made it a much more, I guess, believable and possibly interesting element to this movie. Another thing that I don't know if Aaron would agree with this or not, but having just watched them back to back, I would say that I cared a lot more about the contestants from the first movie because I feel like I was given enough knowledge and background on them to want them to survive.
Yeah.
I guess is the least morbid way I could say it. But we're given one bit of backstory for each of these new contestants. And I'm like, okay, so I don't see any reason to care about them, but I also don't see any aspect of them that makes me think, oh, that's a champion right there. That's somebody who could have survived.
Unless I'm missing something, Andrew, I think the one element of backstory you're talking about isn't even really technically backstory. It's more structural like setup. It's not like, it doesn't tell us anything about how these people became who they are, why Minos wants them here, what is, you know, like any of that stuff.
And that's the biggest problem I have. I guess that's a huge problem I have with this movie is the whole Minos element, because they built on it in the first one and they could have done better here, but they didn't.
Yeah.
A lot of things that I actually liked about the first one, I'm like, ah, you kind of cut those things out.
Mm-hmm.
And for bigger set pieces.
Yeah.
So Minos, for those who forget, is the evil corporation that sort of created the whole thing, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and you mentioned the set pieces again. That I would throw that in the positive column. They are gorgeous. Yeah. Like the rooms are incredible, look beautiful. You know, are fun to look at. That stuff's really, really cool. I go so as far as to say the second room that we deal with hits on every single thing we've talked about. Like even the stuff we said most of it doesn't do, the second room actually does. If every room were like the second room, which I'll just call the bank room.
That's the best room. The best room.
Then this movie would have been amazing. It still would have needed better structure. It still would have needed a better overall like idea of what's going on. That's the other thing. As good as this movie does at the room problem solving, it does poorly with the plot and structure problem solving. None of that stuff feels valuable or makes sense or informs what our like who our characters are in a you know really positive way.
Are we able to spoil the first movie? Is that we're good to do that?
I think that is fine. Yes.
Okay, so in the first movie, the rooms you find out as you progress that they're all tied together through survivor's guilt, you know, and that's the overarching theme for those rooms. The I guess you could say the overarching reasoning for this set is so rushed and like barely holding on. Like if one bit of information isn't revealed that I hated, by the way, even though I really, I hated, by the way, it was so ham-handed, like, sure, we'll just make this a theme. Like, it was so second or tertiary thought of the whole thing.
I would go so far as to say this, Andrew, without, again, trying not to be spoilery. Yeah. If you actually stop and think about what the point of Minos was with this tournament of champions, it makes zero sense. If that's their goal, this is the dumbest, stupidest way to go about. Like, it's just so, again, without spoiling, the overall plot structure, that kind of stuff, which was really interesting and fun in the first movie, is completely nonsense in this one. And that's really frustrating. So, yeah.
And in the very, very beginning of the movie, how the Tournament of the Champions begins makes no sense. Like, they were all and only them were there.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think the movie could have done something fun with that. It could have maybe revealed something about, you know, like, how clever they did that or whatever. But this movie isn't interested in actually rounding out its ideas. It's just, you know, it wants to show you its beautiful escape rooms, which were beautiful, but, you know.
Yeah.
But it just, it didn't at the end make sense.
Well, I for one, can't wait to see this now. Thank you, John.
I want you to see it just so you can commiserate.
I will see it.
Okay, so here's the thing. After watching the first movie, I'm like, okay, that was okay. After watching the second movie, I went back to the first. I'm like, you know what? You were actually pretty good. So
fair.
It made me appreciate how good the first one was comparative to this one.
Well, my one last thing, I guess, would be that I am bummed because honestly, I thought this could be a really cool franchise.
It had potential.
Yeah. It had such potential to be just the fact that I even like am not mad that I watched this because I enjoyed The Rooms, like shows you how much potential this franchise has, because I kind of want another one because I like that stuff. Like, that stuff is really interesting and fun to me, but boy, you better figure out how to invest in your characters better. And I want more talent involved on the not the creativity as far as the rooms goes, but like on the artistic side of things. I want better actors. I want better directors. I want better writers. Like I want this to be, as opposed to what horror franchises usually, this is going to sound dismissive, but I think Paranormal set this, this kind of pattern for low investment, rake in the money, you know, send new actors out there. Doesn't matter, because what matters is the, you know, the gimmick, right? And so we can just keep making Paranormal Activity movie after Paranormal Activity movie, and it doesn't matter. It's just going to keep bringing in money. And I just, you know, I wish there was some more thought on the back end of something like this. So did you have anything
even
else?
Even going with the Saw movie analogy again, the motivation for Jigsaw is like he's punishing people who don't appreciate life and stuff like that. And they kind of touch on that in the first movie as to like why these people are here. They could have done that again. And I think that if they had maybe a switching overarching theme or reason to why specific people go to these escape rooms, you know, and the movie itself is the audience trying to figure out why these specific people, that could be a really interesting asset to this franchise if it continues. And I'm like, okay, so like each new movie, it doesn't have to be about Zoe and Ben. It could be like, okay, so why this group of people? So,
mm-hmm. I mean, right off the top of my head, I'm thinking, well, what if we just did three escape room movies with three completely new casts, and then the fourth movie is getting the winners of each of those,
yeah.
And that's your like team up tournament of champions, and they have to fight each other. And at that point, we're invested in all three pairs of protagonists,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we don't want any of them to lose. And then you sort of get that sort of dramatic conflict.
Yep.
Instead, they're like, no, let's just jump right to whatever this is and then half-ass it.
Yep, you got it. You hit it right on the nose.
I don't have to watch it. I already figured it out.
You got it all figured out. We will do some SIF spoiling on this one that should be in your feed as well. Before we head on to the best ever challenge, just a reminder that you can be a SIF Pop member. A SIF Pop member, you may ask? Well, thank you. I will let you know. SIF Pop members are those who support SIF Pop at Patreon. Patreon.com/SIFTPOP. There are different levels with different fun perks, and it keeps this podcast going, keeps the website going, and we really, really do appreciate that. As far as your end, you get at different levels, you will get an advertisement-free podcast, no ads in your podcast feed, as well as weekly bonus episodes that show up. In this episode, we talked about some Broadway shows we might want to see. This was based on John having recently gone and seen Bruce Springsteen on Broadway. And so we kind of talked a little bit about Broadway and kind of our thoughts on that industry and how much different it is than a lot of pop culture. So if you want to check that out, you can do that at patreon.com/SIFPOP. We also, the first week of the month, have a hangout for different levels where we just hang out and take questions from you and just chat about movies and stuff. So again, check it out at patreon.com/SIFTPOP. Thank you so much for even considering it. We really do appreciate you.
Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP Smart Side today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. This country was built on a distinctly American work ethic. But today, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries. And with that, we sent away good jobs and diminished our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make a variety of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more. All made right here in the USA, from growing the cotton to adding the final touches. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs for seamsters, cutters, and factory workers in towns and cities across the United States. And it's about more than an income. Jobs bring pride, purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.
All right, let's move on to the best ever challenge. That's right, best ever five-word colon movies. I also love the fact that on our screen right now, BEC colon, five-word colon movies, is also a five-word colon phrase. So well done on that one. All right, so let's go number five to number one as we do, and then we'll maybe do some honorable mentions. John, why don't you start us off? What do you got at number five?
Yeah, before I start, though, I do want to repeat what I mentioned at the top of the show, is I think just by nature of the colon, these are almost exclusively franchise films and sequels. And for whatever it is, if you have a colon in it, I feel like universally your movie's probably not great. The Twilight Saga, New Moon, Triple X, State of the Union, Lake
hey,
Placid,
quit stealing
the
my
final
top five.
Chapter,
quick,
Air Bud,
I'll just let you know right
fetch.
Now. I only have one that is either a franchise or a sequel. The rest really? Are all single properties.
Yeah, wow. two well, of my five are single properties as well. Yeah.
Well, good for you. But I mean, looking at my list of movies, I literally did a control F for just movies that had a colon in it, and so many of them were terrible. But of the one that's like the fifth best, when I watched it with my daughter not long ago, Minuscule Valley of the Lost Ants.
Ooh.
This is an animated film without any dialogue. It's almost entirely just visually driven. And it's about this tiny little colony of ants that go like on an adventure through the woods to get some, I think, crumbs from a picnic. Mm. And it's really cute. It's really fun. It reminded me of like the sort of dialogue-free Pixar shorts if it was extended to like an 80-minute runtime. And my daughter loved it. It's very beautifully shot. And yeah, it's a really cute film.
Never heard of that. See, this
yeah,
is what
happens. I think it's actually French. I don't even think it's an American movie, but I found it on I forget which streaming service, but I found it on there like a year and a half ago.
Nice.
Minuscule Valley of the what?
Lost Ants.
Valley of the Lost Ants. That's six words. That's
it is
Valley of the Lost Ants. Minuscule. Yeah, that's six
right,
words.
I can't count.
We'll count it. We'll count it for you. All right, Andrew. Do you want to go second or last?
You're absolutely right. There is a sixth word there, and I did not.
I'll let you go, Aaron.
All right.
Catch the word of.
Of the. It's one word. Of the.
I completely missed that.
All right. My number five is Robin Hood, Men in Tights.
Trump!
All right. Going to get trumped on that one. Andrew, what is your number five?
I'm going to go with Kung Pao, Enter the Fist.
Had that in my honorable mentions for sure. Yeah.
You know, as here's a movie that is so unabashedly dumb that it just... It just embraces that aspect of it. Steve Odekirk is like a truly underappreciated person in Hollywood.
He's the guy that did the Thumb movies, right?
If I was just about to say, if you guys haven't seen like Thumb Wars, Thumb Panic, they are hilarious.
I love the Thumb movies.
Yes. Aaron, do you know what we're talking about? The Thumb movies?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah. Like Thumbtanic and
Thumb Wars. Yeah. I think Thumbfather.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Thumbfather. It's such a dumb yet brilliant idea for a movie. Hey, I'm just going to put a talking mouth and some googly eyes on a thumb and just and make a movie. Like
so
the budget has to be like $50.
Oh, very cheap. So I only just this week finally watched Enter the Dragon with Bruce Lee, and I loved it. Is this like a direct parody of that, or just like really close to that style?
So what Kung Pao is Steve Odekirk actually digitized himself into an old 1960s kung fu movie, and he dubbed everybody else's dialogue like to make sense for his movie. So silly and so funny, like, and it does the whole thing of like even his dialogue where his mouth doesn't match the dialogue he's saying.
That's perfectly normal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's actually impressive for how good this movie looks. Cause he digitizes himself in a way to where it looks like he is also in the 60s. It's not like he's a 720 character in an old 1960s film footage, you know? and he interacts with the characters. Like, he touches them and they can touch him and stuff. And it's like, I think what he did is he actually put himself over the original lead character of this movie. And like, just did, I guess, before deepfake, whatever they did for a deepfake. And it is, there are scenes obviously where the entire thing is a new set for the movie, just for a practical joke or something. It's a movie filled with references. I think it's hilarious. I think this is an absolutely hilarious movie.
Yeah, you'll love it. You'll love it, John. You'll love it.
It's going to the top of my watch list. This sounds perfect.
Nice.
And it's short. So it's funny. Really short, which I love.
It is. It is indeed short. All right. John, what is your number four?
My number four movie was Justice League: colon, The Flashpoint Paradox. The Flashpoint's one word. I recounted. It's five.
Good.
Justice League, The Flashpoint Paradox. Yeah, okay, yeah.
Sure. You're counting syllables. Don't. That's
right. Yeah.
Justice League, The Flashpoint.
It's too many.
Yeah, you're right.
This movie, I was going to say, I know you've seen it, Andrew. This is like the beginning of a kind of loose continuity in the DC animated universe that begins a series of, I want to say, like 15 or 20 movies. And it's fantastic. It's just like one of the best adaptations of the Justice League and one of the best, I think, animated comic book movies I've ever seen. Probably my favorite in the DC animated universe, at least what I've seen. I'm only like halfway through my watch. And the other one I might maybe swap in for number four would be Batman Under the Red Hood. I think those two are my favorite in this franchise. And yeah, if you like Batman and Superman, this is one of the best, I think, adaptations of those characters in a way that felt in service of their characters and really kind of did honor to the concept of a Justice League, like getting everyone together and pooling their talents in a way that makes sense. I really dug it. Nice. And again, short, 80 minutes, I think, at the best.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Actually, it was my favorite DC animated movie.
Until you saw the last one.
Until this new one, Justice League Dark Apocalypse War.
And I haven't got there yet, but I'm looking forward to it for sure.
It is so much in the vein of Flashpoint. If you love Flashpoint, you will automatically love Apocalypse War.
Nice. Looking forward to it for sure.
Yeah.
My number four.
If I would have thought about it, I would have put it on my list.
My number four, which may get trumped as well, is Dodgeball, A True Underdog Story.
Trump.
I missed this one. That would have made my list, I think. That's a good one.
All right, Andrew, what is your number four?
Literally everything Aaron has said so far.
That's fine. Hey, what's new? You know, this is my week every week.
Okay. So my number four now?
Yeah.
The Croods, A New Age.
I knew you were going to have this on your list. You loved this movie, man.
You said it was the funniest movie of last year. Is that what you said?
Yeah. I can't believe, because the first movie was so forgettable. It's one of the most forgettable movies ever, was the first one. This sequel came out. I begrudgingly drug myself to the theater, plopped down in the seat, and 2 hours later, I was crying. I was laughing so hard. I was laughing more than the kids in the audience, you know. And they're all like, who's this crazy man who won't stop giggling? Is he the Joker? You know, it's just, I couldn't stop. It was so funny. So, yeah, I'm sorry you have to watch the first Croods to kind of understand what's going on in this one, but it's worth it to get to it because it's that funny.
I got to tell you, I love your love for this movie.
Selling me on it.
I do not share it as passionately as you. I think it is a funny movie and I enjoy it, but man, I think the first movie is a much better movie than this one. But but that's just my experience. So yeah,
them's fighting words. No.
All right, on to our number threes. John, what do you got at number three?
This is, I think, of the Spider-Man movies, my favorite that has five words in a colon, Spider-Man Far From Home.
Yeah, I'm going to have to trump you on that one.
Okay, great.
There you go. Let's see. So my number three, then, is Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle.
This is another great one that I totally missed on my list.
Yeah.
It was honorable mention. Yeah.
Funny film.
It is very funny. And again, another one of those fun surprises. You know, I wasn't expecting them to be able to reboot Jumanji in any way that was going to be, you know, attractive to me.
I think we all have the same, I think, opinion on it. But would we have liked it as much if we didn't expect it to suck. Because I went in fully expecting it not to be good. And I think it exceeded my expectations so much, I actually like overgraded how good it was. Because I was expecting trash. Sure. And I don't know that it's like brilliant, but like compared to what I thought it was going to be, it's so much fun.
I think it's hard to say.
Go on, Aaron.
No, it's just it's hard to say.
I think that if I went into this movie expecting it to be okay, kind of funny, I would still, you know, be surprised.
Yeah.
Because I'm like you, John. I went in this like, this is going to be horrible. Why are they doing this to Robin Williams? This is going to be awful. I left that theater going, I'm excited to watch that again. And I actually bought it. And, you know, I watch it every now and then. It's a funny movie. It's a good, interesting premise. You know, they actually made, you know, the video game element of this whole Jumanji.
It might be one of the best video game movies ever made. It really might be. Because every other video game adaptation, especially when it's based on an existing property, it just fumbles it badly.
Yeah.
This is one of my favorite video game movies.
It's not really a video game adaptation, though, is it?
No, it's not an adaptation, but I think it captures the spirit of video games and the concept of lives and challenges and like fetch quests. I think it nails that really well. But yeah, I think it helps that it's not in direct service of an actual product.
Right. It's not actual video game IP. So it'd be similar to something like Edge of Tomorrow or something that is definitely very video gamey, but it's not necessarily, IP.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. Good call. It was one of my honorable mentions.
What do you got at number three, Andrew?
This is where I have Robin Hood Men in Tights.
There you go. And that's my number five. Your number three. Talk about it.
It might be recency bias because I just watched it again for like the 5,000th time last week. I love Mel Brooks. He's one of the goats. And I think Cary Elwes just kind of has that persona that it just screams Robin Hood. You know, it was like he was born to play this guy. I don't know why this type of humor died out because you don't really see.
Oh, I miss it. I really do.
Yeah. It's
like the wordplay, you know, and like the misdirection and like the visual switches and stuff. It's just like the stuff Leslie Nielsen used to do. Abrams and Zucker, and anything Mel Brooks did in the 80s and 90s, it's just like I miss that stuff. It was it was a different style of comedy. And it was just like there's a wholesome quality.
It was wholesome prop humor with some overlaying lewdness to it, you know.
When's
like
the last
chastity belt?
when's the last good version of this? Like are we
wrongfully
talking
accused?
Maybe Scary Movie, and that was 20 something years ago.
I was gonna say, were we thinking maybe Scary Movie? Like, this has to come back. Somebody will find this again. Maybe we're forgetting something, but I'm with you. This seems to have disappeared from pop culture.
There was a movie a few years back that nobody saw called They Came Together with Paul Rudd and Amy Poehler, and it was a spoof on romantic comedies.
Oh, is that the one where they're like, oh, so this is the part where we're supposed to break up in the rom-coms?
Yeah.
Like, it was very self-aware.
It's more self-aware than like prop comedy and wordplay, but it has, I feel like, a little bit of like the spirit of this type of movie, the wholesomeness and like the self-aware, self-referential kind of gig. I think that movie, I didn't love it, but I felt like this is an old style comedy I wish we
saw. Is it worth a watch at least?
Yeah, I totally would recommend
it. But part of why we love these movies is their willingness to be so completely ridiculous. Like not just to make fun of something, but just to, you know, make a visual joke that obviously has no place in the, you know.
Yeah. Was the last time we had like a good parody film? The Austin Powers franchise, maybe? Because everything.
Austin Powers is a good, that's a good call. That is very similar to this.
The last time we had a good, I'm trying to think of other parody films lately, have been all of the movie 43 gang, right? The guys that did Disaster Movie. And those are all just awful.
Yeah.
Would you count Freaky Friday as a
Freaky? The Freaky that just came out? No,
I think with Vince Vaughn.
Is it Freaky? Friday the 13th.
Yeah, it's okay, just called Freaky. But no, that's too way too grounded in reality. Way too grounded in reality to be considered.
Yeah.
I don't think we've had a good one honestly since the 90s. Like Scary Movie and Austin Powers are probably like the last good parody movies in this sort of wholesome comedy vein. And that was 25 years ago.
To bring us back to Robin Hood Men in Tights, I will tell you, I fired this up with one of my boys, a teenager, and he did not get it. Like, it was just like, this is really bad, Dad. Like, this is dumb. And it's like, yeah, I mean, maybe maybe it's just something that's, maybe there's just some nostalgia there, and you know, the culture has outgrown that kind of stuff. And granted, a lot of the jokes don't hold up well either. You know, a lot of the jokes do play on things like gay panic and, you know, stuff that we wouldn't do now. So there's an interesting, thought there. I wonder if, you know, maybe the time is just gone.
I hope not.
Yeah.
I'm with you. Yeah. All right.
So Robin, that's my number three.
Robin Hood Men in Tights. I had it at number five. You had it at number three.
Medal position.
Yeah. Number two. What do you got, John?
This is John Mulaney, the comeback kid. I know you guys did an episode on stand-up comedy specials not long ago.
And
John Mulaney, is probably one of my favorite comedians working today. Definitely wishing him well in his alcohol recovery, whatever he's in right now. I know he had rehab for a bit. But yeah. I hope he comes roaring back, because the world needs more of his work. He is so gosh darn funny. And the Comeback Kid might be his best special to date. I think it's from Radio City Music Hall, sold out show in New York, and he crushes it, like the 90-minute
show. Is
this
the one where he does the bit about meeting Bill Clinton as a kid?
Yes, this is the special that ends with like an 8-minute story about Bill Clinton, and it is
so good.
It is so funny.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen it, I'm almost certain it's on Netflix. Please watch it.
It is
a great way to spend an hour and a half. He is absolutely funny.
Good choice.
I didn't even think of stand-ups.
Good choice. We can talk about Spider-Man Far From Home now. I had it at my number two. And John, you had it at number three. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yep.
So, yeah, Spider-Man Far From Home. Really dig this one. Really love the modern MCU Spider-Man movies. Dig the Mysterio stuff, Jake Gyllenhaal stuff. I think this is a really fun movie and enjoy it quite a bit. So. It comes in.
I loved everything they did with the character and the villain. I think Jake is one of the better villains in any of the Spider-Man films. And there's something about Tom Holland sort of getting into his own here without the shadow of Robert Downey Jr. completely intrinsically linked to the first film of his that makes this one really work. And I think perhaps more so than the original. I wish they would just do a Spider-Man in New York movie, but Spider-Man in Europe was pretty fun too.
The chat is claiming foul play, that Spider-Man is one hyphenated word, not two words. And to that I say, just give us a break, will you?
Erroneous on all counts.
I think the hyphen means it's two words.
That's what I thought too.
If it was one word, there wouldn't be a hyphen.
There wouldn't be a hyphen. Exactly. Thank you. Thank you very much.
I'm with you guys.
Let's see. So I think that means, Andrew, you are number two.
I'm going to go with Dragon, the Bruce Lee story.
Nice.
I know the music from this is awesome, but I've never seen the film.
Oh, the score for this movie is beautiful. It's a Rob Cohen movie, who we know from movies like the first Fast and the Furious, The Good One. He also did like Dragonheart. So, you know, he knows how to score a movie. Jason Scott Lee, who plays Bruce Lee in this, is so amazing. He fully captures what Bruce Lee, like, he just, his movements, his mannerisms, it's so uncanny. It's gorgeous. And there's an element to this movie where everybody knows that Bruce Lee was like fighting inner demons and stuff, like from moving to America and stuff like that, and the cultural shock and stuff like that. There is a visualization of that inner demon that goes throughout this movie that is so terrifying yet exciting to watch. It's like ingrained into the story itself of this movie to give it some kind of supernatural element, and it's all psychological. Like, the viewer knows that it's, you know, all in his head, but the way that it's visualized makes it seem just as real to us as it possibly did to him. The culture shock, the racism, everything that he had to deal with is in this movie. I think that it's brilliant. It was one of the first movies I got to watch, actually, because my dad was a huge like Bruce Lee and martial arts like a movie guy growing up. So mm-hmm. this was one of those first movies
so
I watched.
So this isn't, this, for some reason, I always thought this is a documentary, but this is a dramatized.
No, it's a dramatized, yeah.
Okay, great.
Yeah. yeah.
And again, like, I only just like 8 days ago watched Enter the Dragon for the first time. So I'm kind of in like a martial arts mood. I need to watch some more Bruce Lee stuff.
Nice.
I would highly recommend checking this movie out. It yeah. is very 90s. Like you can, like if you were to like,
that's you, that's fine. That's a good thing to me.
yeah. If you were to plug this movie in and watch it, not knowing when it take place, you would be like, oh yeah, that's 90s.
Very nice.
Yeah, I really like it.
On to our number ones. Jonathan, kick us off.
I'll probably upset half of the group here with this pick. Star Wars, The Last Jedi is absolutely my favorite Star Wars movie behind Empire. And I love this movie. I love all the choices it makes. And I think everyone who says otherwise is wrong. And that's my story. I'm sticking with it. We don't have to relitigate a conversation that's been had 1,000 times over the last 3 years, but I am firmly in the loved it camp. And yeah, definitely my favorite 5-word in a colon movie.
Interesting. Sorry. I did not have this one. I would have. I love Star Wars, The Last Jedi. Are there colons in the Star Wars movies?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think so. I'm going off however it was titled on Letterboxd, and that's usually pulled from, you know, whatever official.
Then I just missed this one. This would have been way up. This might have been my number one as well.
Yeah, it does have a colon.
Okay. Well, there you go. I just missed this one then. Yeah, I love it as well. We're on the same page at the risk of starting wars.
Not sorry.
It's the most beautiful Star Wars movie ever.
There you
made.
Go.
Hey, I'll
Way
I'll
to say
that.
Something
I'll
nice.
I'll give you that.
Great
I'll
job. That. Great job. Great job. There are plenty of people who are with you, Andrew. So don't you just because you're outnumbered here doesn't mean there aren't those who agree
with you.
Oh, I
know I'm right.
We both do. It's great. What's your number one, Aaron?
My number one is Captain America, the First Avenger. It is
really
yes.
Interesting.
This is one
of my least favorites.
I love this movie so much. I think it's a lot of it has to do with the Captain America character. I love the themes in this movie. I love the pluckiness of the character. I love Chris Evans' performance. This is probably the movie. And I liked Iron Man. I really did. But this is the movie where I fell in love with the MCU. And I was just like, I want to see this character, you know, team up and do stuff. And I think there's a reason you kind of see the Captain America, Tony Stark, you know, kind of which team are you thing happen. Because I think they are the two more compelling performances and characters in the series. And yeah, I was definitely Team Cap. I love this.
This is very surprising to hear you say, because I actually re-ranked the whole MCU just this week because Loki finished.
Mm-hmm.
And this is my least favorite of all 26 Marvel properties.
Oh, wow. What don't you like about it?
There's no middle act. We never get to see him actually be Captain America. We have a quick montage, and then he's fighting Red Skull on the airplane. And I wanted so much more of the middle of the movie where he sort of finds his identity. And I love the stuff in New York in the past, but then I feel like the back half of the movie is rushed.
But that is his identity. His identity is the stuff in the past. He doesn't have to be. That's the whole beauty of the movie is he doesn't become something new. He's just himself in new armor. Like that's.
Yeah, but I don't know. There's so much of this that it felt like a lot of wasted potential. And I love the character. And I love Winter mm-hmm. Soldier. I love Civil War. And Chris Evans is probably my favorite actor in the entire franchise. But this first movie, I think because I wanted so much more out of it, I was just like, oh, this is just. For me, and again, not a bad movie, just my least favorite of the whole pack. So I'm surprised to hear you say you loved it, but good
yeah,
for you.
For me, that whole like that skinny kid, you know, that we see in the first from the Bronx that we see in the maybe Brooklyn.
He's Spider-Man's from
one's from which, right?
Yes. He is from
Brooklyn.
Queens. Spider-Man is from Queens. He is from Brooklyn.
That's right.
Cap is from Brooklyn.
Yeah.
So that skinny kid from Brooklyn thing, like that's when I see Captain America in all of the movies, that's who I see. Like, I'm just like, how cool is it? Like, that's the, anyways. Yeah. I don't need to over explain it, but I love that movie. And it comes in at my number one. Andrew, what do you got at number one? I think I know.
It's probably smack dab in the middle of the MCU list for me. Mm-hmm. Maybe well, lower half of the middle.
Most people would have had Captain America the Winter Soldier yeah. in this list above yeah. the first Avenger, probably. I'm just not one of those people.
Yeah. They haven't What's your seen number one? Kung, they haven't seen Kung Pao enter the fist, apparently. no, my number one is Dodgeball, A True Underdog Story.
Yeah.
Right on.
Yeah, this movie is beyond hilarious. Ben Stiller kills it in this movie. This might be the perfect the best character he's ever played, and I'm including like Zoolander in this list.
I have long argued that Ben Stiller is terrible as a straight guy or straight man character in romantic comedies and stuff, but as like a zany villain, he is fantastic. Happy Gilmore, Heavyweights, this, Tropic Thunder, he is brilliant. But when he tries to play like a regular everyday schlub, he is so unengaging to me.
Yeah. This movie has so many lovable characters. Alan Tudyk as Pirate Steve, you know? I mean, that's ridiculous. This whole movie is ridiculous, and I love it for it.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chuck Norris.
You know, carrying on our conversation about parodies, is it possible the energy of that silliness and ridiculousness got kind of poured into kind of these man-child comedies of the 2000s, you know? Like
absolutely. Maybe.
You know, like Will Ferrell and Sandler and Stiller, you know, like that's where kind of that energy went for ridiculous, dumb humor, because there are gags in Zoolander or Dodgeball or whatever that would fit right in with a parody kind of movie. You know, like they're not grounded in any kind of reality. They're just visual jokes or word plays or, you know, so maybe some of that energy kind of went into these kind of movies.
Yeah,
I could see that happening.
The slapstickiness.
Yeah.
The entire genre of comedy has definitely evolved considerably in our lifetimes to a point where the movies that we liked and the movies that made money in the early 90s are so different than like the AAA comedies that come out today. They're so very different.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, there you go.
Good pick, though.
Those are our top fives as far as honorable mentions go. John, did you have any you wanted to mention first?
I mean, well, besides Manos, The Hands of Fate, and Air Bud, Seventh Inning Fetch, and Maze Runner, Sports Trials, there wasn't a lot to pick from. Those are all terrible, terrible movies, by the way.
X-Men. Manos has a really great MST3K.
The MST3K version of that is fantastic. The movie as itself is of an abomination. I was actually about to say X-Men Days of Future Past, but if we're using the hyphen rule, that's six words, so I'm disqualifying it. The first Jurassic Park sequel, The Lost World, that one I have a soft spot for. That was one of the first big like PG-13 rated movies I saw in theaters. And it's pretty good. I think it holds up.
Yeah, Lost World Jurassic Park is worth mentioning here. I would also mention Star Trek The Motion Picture. You know, it's not super great, but it's certainly worth mentioning. Robin Hood.
Well, I think there's at least five or six Star Trek pictures that fit that five-word rule. So, I mean, if you want The Voyage Home or... Final Frontier is only two words, but there's probably a couple.
Probably.
Just so everybody knows, Manos Hands of Fate, The Hands of Fate, has a 1.8 on IMDb.
It is my second least favorite movie ever made. It is number two. There's only one movie worse.
Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, probably worth a mention.
I like it. I like it.
And National Treasure, Book of Secrets, the National Treasure sequel, isn't all that bad either.
Yeah, that's also pretty good.
So there you go.
I got two more.
Yeah, what do you got?
John Wick, Chapter 3, Parabellum.
Yep, that's a solid one.
Yep.
And Godzilla, King of the Monsters, the movie that I'm the only one in the world who likes a lot.
Maybe not the only one. Yeah, but
universally, though, going through that list, so many of the movies that I pulled for this were movies I hated. Anchorman 2, The Legend Continues, I didn't really care for that. Did you guys?
Nah, not particularly. Oh, no. Not particularly.
So would that mean Men in Tights? Was that the one that did we have any others?
You had Dodgeball. Dodgeball at number one. I had it number four. So that would probably be if there's an end. And
five.
John said he would have put it on his if he had
forgotten. It probably would have been I don't think it would have been number one. But
technically, if we're going by that route, Last Jedi probably would have been our choice because, you know, both Jonathan and I would have had it at number one. So
I'm just cowering under my desk right now.
Please don't hurt.
Well, you should have had it on your list.
That's right. I should have. I guess we have to go with Dodgeball. All right. Let's move into the buried treasure. What's that one thing in any area of pop culture you want to let people know about? Andrew, kick us off. What do you got?
I'm going to go with the movie that you keep saying is really good, and I finally checked it out. I'm going to go with Greenland.
Oh, nice. What'd you think?
Yeah, it is decent.
I liked it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what? You kept comparing it to like the big disaster movies of the 90s and stuff like that. This is a lot darker than those disaster movies of the 90s, I think.
Yeah.
But it's still really good, and I found elements of this. I'm like, yeah, that's probably how it would go. Yeah, that's probably, and that's what I really appreciated about this movie is like there was a realness to it, and that in and of itself made elements of this movie a lot more terrifying.
Yeah.
Of like, what would you do? I wouldn't have to worry because there's no way in hell I would ever be in the selected. So I wouldn't have to worry about that. I wouldn't have to worry about that phone call.
Like, let's just go get a drink and wait.
Yeah. They're not calling me, you know, I'm going to be, like Stick from Daredevil. I'm just going to be sitting there with my buddies playing cards until the end, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But it was a really good movie.
I think it's one of my favorite like straight disaster movies we've had in a long time.
I agree.
It reminded me. It reminded me a lot of Armageddon, Deep Impact, Twister, the ones that like the big blockbuster events we used to have every summer. It seems, and that's definitely like a good throwback to that.
Yeah,
I will say this: Marina Bakarin in this movie is really good. She is swinging for the fences with her performance. Like
there's
the
some
whole
moments,
thing with
man.
Their kid Nathan. Yeah. Yeah, that hit home. So, yeah, and then Gerard Butler doing his Gerard butteriness.
Mm-hmm.
He's dependable.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I will go next. I checked out Gunpowder Milkshake, a recent release on Netflix, I believe.
I saw this in my feed. How was it?
Okay, I have complex thoughts. Overall, I will say that this movie is very... I don't want to use the word good. It's compelling. Let's go with compelling. This is one of those movies that you watch and you're just like, I'm into the world building. I like what you're doing here. The action is fun and interesting and engaging. It's, you know, definitely a lot of that going on. The cast is. You know, what are you like Carla Gugino, Michelle Yeoh, Lena Headey, Angela Bassett, Paul Giamatti? There's good people showing up in this. And that's not to mention Karen Gillan, who's kind of the central character. So I had a really good time. However, I don't know that there's a lot underneath it that engaged me in any kind of intellectual way. I wanted it to be a little more. Let's just say this. All of the thematic stuff is right on the surface. It's not like metaphored or layered in or anything like that. Like, I mean, obviously we are dealing with a group of women assassins, and that is right there on the surface. You know exactly what that's indicating, saying, you know, the villain and the things the villain men say. Like, none of that is subtle, right? Like, this isn't doing anything subtle with its message, and not every movie has to. So, yeah, I would compare it to like, John Wick kind of idea, where like if you really dig the world building and the action, you're going to have a blast with it. I think some people will cringe a little bit at that and, you know, say John Wick's on another level. Maybe you're right. Maybe not. I don't know.
You said it was on Netflix, right?
I believe it is on Netflix.
Yeah. Well, then that's fine. Zero effort for me. I don't have to go out of my way. I don't have to pay any extra cash. I don't have to log in.
Barrier to entry is zero.
It's very low. There's an old meme, and it's from the movie we mentioned earlier, right? Winter Soldier, where Sam is telling Steve some like all the stuff he missed while you were under the ice. And he's like, okay, I'll add it to the list. And my thought is, movie exists. Okay, I'll add it to the list. Like, you don't have to convince me. I'll watch it.
There is something going on here with mothers and daughters. And like there are the movie is saying something about mothers and daughters, so I don't want to make it sound like there's nothing that this movie is trying to say underneath the surface. But it just wasn't as engaging to me. And part of that may be that I've never been a mother or a daughter. But, you know, I often love movies that engage me on a level of something I haven't personally experienced. So I think for the most part, you're going to like it for the action and the world building would be my guess.
Okay.
So I think it's worth
a
watch.
With a cast like this and it's an action movie, I'll check it out for sure.
Yeah, I think it's worth a watch. I think you'll have a good time. That wouldn't surprise me at all.
As long as I think you've, you know, set the expectation bar that, you know, we're not getting the next Citizen Kane or anything like that. But
yeah, I enjoyed Atomic Blonde more than this. So, you know, kind of on that range is a similar idea, concept, similar things you'll like about those movies. But I actually liked Atomic Blonde more, although I may be in the minority on that. So. This is a little more over the top, where Atomic Blonde is a little more gritty, right? Like this is a little more like bright colors and, you know, that kind of stuff.
So. Hey, I love over the top action.
There you go. Finish us off.
Sometimes you just need a movie where you can turn your brain off and enjoy some explosions.
Jonathan, what do you got for your buried treasure?
So I went in a different direction. This is a completely left field pick. It is a short film from 1977 produced by the British Transportation Films, warning children about the dangers of railway lines. It's called The Finishing Line.
Okay.
And the entire narrative takes place in this little boy's head. He's overlooking the railroad tracks, and he's imagining what would happen if we did play on the railway tracks, even though we're not supposed to. And in his head, over the next 20 minutes, you see a series of Olympic-style games with all of his classmates, like who can run over the train tracks fast enough just as the train comes. And it's like, red team, blue team, go! Oh no, yellow team got hit by the train and died. You didn't make it. And then the next round is like another game involving the train. Who can like throw rocks at the train as it passes by? And it's like, oh, you hurt three people inside. You lose. And then the final challenge is walking through the dark train tunnel all at once, all like 100 kids walking through the train tunnel. And like one of the last shots of the film, I'll just spoil it because it doesn't matter, is only three of them coming out the other end. Like everyone, the implication is every child has been run over by a train and killed. And the movie is not graphic at all. Like, it doesn't show any of this. It's all just implied. But it is such a curiosity to watch the kind of, like, PSAs, after-school specials they would have shown to kids 44 years ago in Britain. Like, hey, trains are dangerous. And if you don't believe us, watch all these kids die. And it's on YouTube. You can watch it for free. And there's like a cult quality to these, like, old movies that are, like, really I'm trying to figure out. It's not, again, not graphic, but the implied graphicness of it. And like the acting is all like very straight and not at all concerned with like how horrifying the implications are. And it's such an interesting and curious movie. And if you have 20 minutes and you're into some weird morbid stuff like this, like I am, it was an interesting film and it sent me down a rabbit hole. There's five or six of these where they all kind of like play off the fears of like young British children. And these movies are very weird, and wow. I kind of loved it.
Wow. Just wow.
Yeah.
That's wow.
That is quite quite a buried treasure.
You said buried, and like I took that to heart. This only has 315 watches on Letterboxd. It is not a very well-known film, but the people have seen it. Average rating, 8 out of 10.
Wow. That's
it
called
is different.
The Finishing Line. Is that what it's called? And you can check that out on YouTube.
Yeah, it's on. The quality's not great, but it has like that campy quality to it that makes it kind of funny unintentionally and also super morbid and weird.
Man, John, that treasure was so buried after you dug it up. You also found baby Jessica down there, didn't you?
It's buried pretty deep.
That is deep, man. That is deep.
I had to go for something weird. I can safely say no one has ever mentioned The Finishing Line on this show. You are absolutely right, Phil. That is a first, sure.
The Finishing Line is on YouTube. Greenland, I think, is on HBO Max. And Gunpowder Milkshake is on Netflix. Well, we did it, guys. We did a podcast. Woo! Never let anyone tell you if you set your mind to something, you can't make it happen. Podcasting has happened today, and we all are rejoicing.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Sif Pop is part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network. You can find out more about other shows on the network at studiodna.media or by searching Studio DNA in your podcast player. Huge thanks to Andrew for hanging out again today.
Thank you, buddy.
Huge thanks to producer Phil for producing the audio and video show.
Phil.
I have no idea what just happened.
I'm just kidding. My goal is to get less and less intelligible.
Got it. Success has happened. Right. Thank you to Drew for putting together the visual content for the show.
Big claps.
And thank you to Jonathan Paula for hanging out with us again today. Where do you want to send people today, Jonathan?
I don't know. why don't you check out my Letterboxd feed? I'm always rating and reviewing stuff over there.
There you go.
Letterboxd.com/John Paula. That's without an H. And you can hear what I thought about the finishing line and its counterpart from the year prior called Apaches, where the kids play Indians at a farm and accidentally fall into a tractor. So that's also an enjoyable one.
What in the world?
Just throw that in right in the close. Just throw it right into the close.
Check that one out, too.
If you would like to support this kind of...
One of those, hay billing machines.
No, we got it. If you would like to support this kind of nonsense, you can go to patreon.com/siffpop. Support starts at $3 a month. You get all the bonus episodes at a certain level, as well as some other fun perks, depending on your level of support. Lots of ways to connect with us. Feel free to leave a comment, a rating, or a review. You can do that at Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. You can also email us any questions you have, any feedback you have to feedback@siffpop.com. And finally, if you're having a good time, your movie-loving friends will probably like it too, so let them know about it and that listening is much easier than sequel-baiting consecutive films with the exact same scene. We'll be back next week with Old and Snake Eyes. Some G.I. Joe and some M. Night Shyamalan next week.
Episode 300.
Yeah. We'll catch you then.
Bye.
See you later.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.